and welcome. Today is the 18th? 17th of April 2012, and we are just back from India 2 days ago. We were gone for 3 weeks. And we went to West Bengal, and we went to Puri, Jagannath Puri, in the state of Orissa. I have been to both of these places before, 35 years ago. It has changed. 35 years ago, I was in West Bengal with my guru, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, and there were a few of us there. I don't know, 300 people in March of 1977, and then he left his body in November 1977.
Prabhupada.
So I haven't been there since then. According to Vaishnava understanding, Vaishnava means follower of Vishnu. Vishnu is God. Vishnu, God in his forearm form. That's Vishnu on the altar on the right-hand side. In the far right, you see Ganesh. Next to Ganesh, as you come to the left, is Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. Next to Lakshmi is Vishnu. So that is God in his forearm form. And he holds what in his hands? Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. The conch, the chakra, and the club, and the lotus. And in his two-arm form, same person. In his two-arm form, he is Krishna. Krishna means irresistible.
Attractive.
All attractive. The most attractive person. And so that's Krishna with the flute. He plays the flute. And every sound within and without, within and outside the creation, comes from that flute. Meditate on that for a moment or two. What that must sound like. When Krishna plays his flute in the forest of Vrindavan, everything stops. Calves stop suckling on the teats of the cows. The deer stop eating grass. The peacocks become stunned. The birds become rapt in attention. Everything stops. Things fall from people's hands because it is the most beautiful sound imaginable. So that's Krishna. Vishnu or Krishna being God. And as we mentioned many, many times, God has how many names? Unlimited, really. We have a book here. We could sit here and chant if you like. It's called the Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu. We could spend an evening chanting that. And the names describe what?
Qualities and pastimes.
His qualities and also things he does. That's what the names describe. So, according to Vaishnavism, or worship of Vishnu, it is recommended that If you're a follower of Vishnu, you should visit the Char Dham. The Char Dham are the four. Char means four. Dham means but not any place. Sacred place. Holy place is a Dham. There's the four Dhams or four sacred places dear to Vishnu. It doesn't mean there are only four, but it is recommended one visit these four holy places in one's lifetime. And they are Dwarka, where Krishna built the city off the west coast of Gujarat. And that city, when he left, Krishna was here 5,000 years ago as Krishna. And when he left the earth, he sunk the city before he left. I've mentioned this for you, to you before. They've recently found the ruins of Dwarka. Fairly recently, within the last 10 or 15 years, off the coast of Gujarat, exactly where it says it was. And they are beginning to do their archaeological studies on that. So that's one. When Krishna was a king and he had many palaces, he established his kingdom in Dwarka. Then up north, that's on the west coast, Dwarka. Up north in the Himalaya, he has another place, the Char Dham, and that is Badrinath, also known as Badrik Ashram. And that is a very sacred place because the manifestation of Nara Narayan Rishi has taken place there. Narayan is Vishnu, another name for Vishnu. And Nara is his companion. And Nara and Narayan are known also to be Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna is Nara, the human aspect. And Narayan, or Krishna, is the Vishnu Tattva, the divine aspect. So we went a few years ago up to Badrinath. At that place is the Alakananda River, which is beautiful, beautiful. What do you call it? Glacial river. It's that wonderful green color that you only see when it comes from off a glacier. It's that sort of crystal green. Very powerful river. That river is traveling at a speed. And nearby is the ashram of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is another incarnation of Vishnu, an empowered incarnation who wrote all the Vedas, spoke all the Vedas, and divided the Vedas into the four major Vedas, Rig, Yajus, Sama, Atharva, and also wrote the Mahabharata, various other books.
Vyasadeva,
Srila Vyasadeva. Vaipayana Vyas, born on an island, Dvipa. So we went to his ashram, where he composed Mahabharata. That was a very potent place. Not this trip, that was another trip. And right nearby was a cave No, Vyasa was in the cave. And right nearby was a Ganesh temple. And that's the story of why Ganesh has one tusk. Why does Ganesh have one tusk? If you see any depiction of Ganesh, as you see there, he has two tusks, but one's busted off. If you see a picture or a depiction of Ganesh with two tusks, that ain't Ganesh. One's broken. Why? Vyasadev had to compose the Mahabharata, which was 100,000 shlokas. Shloka means? Verse. 100,000. Sanskrit poetry. Never mind poetry. Sanskrit poetry. And, it's a story, but it's also peppered with philosophical texts. It's kind of everything under the sun. So, he was going to compose this work, but he needed a scribe, somebody to write it down. So he approached Ganesh. He said, "Would you be my scribe and write down the text for me?" And Ganesh said, "Yeah, sure, why not? On one condition." And what is that condition? That when I write, my pen must never leave the page. In other words, you must keep composing. If you make me wait, if I finish a line and I come to the end of that and I have to sit there and wait for you to compose the next line, I'm done, I'm out of here. I want to be able to continuously write. So while you're composing, I'm listening and I'm recording. If my pen leaves the paper, find yourself another scribe. What did Vyasadeva say? Okay. Sanskrit poetry now. If you study Sanskrit, you'll see what a daunting task that would be. So he agreed, and the way it worked was, when he describes action, and this person did this, and they went here, and they did that, and that happened, that's done in mostly anushtup. In the way that the poetry is anushtup meter. So it's very simple. And you can compose a lot of verses. Well, if you're Vyasadeva, you can compose a lot of verses quickly. So that's what he did. So he just rattled them off, and Ganesh, of course, remembered everything and wrote. Then Vyasa would come to some very difficult and complex philosophical verses, which he'd have to sit there and he'd have to think for a while to try and determine how he was going to organize the material, both poetically and philosophically. So while Ganesh was busy still writing the other simpler verses, Vyasa was composing the other verses. And then, just as Ganesh was about to finish, out he would come, Vyasadeva, with the next verses. And in this way, before you know it, 100,000 verses have been composed and written down, as you do in a day or two's work.
Is that why Ganesh is associated with writers then?
Yes, because he broke off his tusk. He says, "I have no pen. Some ink, dip the tusk in the ink, and off we go." Yes. So we went there. So that's the second one. The other one, the Chardham, Rameshwaram. And what is the famous place, Rameshwaram? That is down in southeast India. It is in Tamil Nadu, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tamil Nadu. Tamil Nadu has all the many, many of the big famous temples in India are in Tamil Nadu. temple alley. It goes all the way down. So Rameshwaram is right on the coast, and if we look east from Rameshwaram, what do we see across the water?
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. So what happened there? Class.
Ravana told Rama's true love.
Ravana stole Rama's true love, Sita, and made off with her. We didn't know at first where he had taken her. He took her to Lanka, Sri Lanka. So they built the bridge. He found the monkeys. Well, they weren't really monkeys. We've talked about this before. They were vanaras. Half man, half monkey, but we're not to think like they're just monkeys, because they're vanaras, they're very learned beings. And Hanuman, being the foremost among them, was a great scholar. Hanuman is an incarnation of Shiva and the son of the wind god. Very, very powerful being. Everybody knows Hanuman. Everybody loves Hanuman. And they discovered that through Hanuman that Sita was being held in Lanka. And so Ram had to take the army over, largely a monkey army, Vanara army, and rescue Sita, kill Ravan. So they had to build a bridge. There was no bridge. So they weren't about to undertake an engineering structural prototype. Well, they were actually, but not in the traditional sense. So they built a floating bridge out of
stones.
Well, we all know that stones don't float. How would you build a floating bridge out of stones? Now that would be an engineering marvel, would it not? What was the trick they used? It was a very simple trick. I invite you to try this at home. Please try this at home. They wrote something on each stone. What did they write? Ram. They wrote the Sanskrit mantra, the name of God, the name of Vishnu, Ram. R-A-M-A. On every stone. And the monkeys would take them and heave them into the sea. And they would sit and float on top. And there was a little spider. And he was right at the edge of the water. And with his eight legs, I don't know how many legs he was using, he was flicking little grains of sand into the water. One of the monkeys came by and said, "What are you doing? Get out of here, you're going to get crushed. Somebody's going to stand on you, you're going to be hit by a stone. What do you think you're doing?" And the spider said, "I'm helping Ram build the bridge to Lanka. And Ram recognized that it doesn't matter who you are, what you can do, whether you can throw huge rocks or a couple of grains of sand. It's all about your devotion. What you do out of love to the extent of your capacity." Was the spider's seva, his service, any less than that of the powerful monkeys? No. We could say it appears that the monkey's service was more significant because they could throw big stones, but no. It was no less. In God's eyes, it was no less. So we went to Rameshwaram, And then I said to Kalindi, now you have to go to Puri. Puri is Jagannath Puri, and it is on, where's that big Jagannath? Can you go get the large one that we got? That's on the windowsill there. In Odisha, the state of Odisha, West Bengal, and then Odisha, East Bengal, used to be, is now Bangladesh. And before that was East Pakistan. Before that was East Bengal. So, in Puri, Puri is a very, very powerful place and a very sacred place. Another name for Puri is Purushottam Kshetra. Kshetra means field or place, and Purushottam means the Supreme Person. And the Supreme Person is Jagannath. Nath means Lord. And Jagan or Jagat means the universe. So Jagannath means the Lord of the universe.
Why is the word Jagannath?
Well, from Jagannath they get Juggernaut.
Juggernaut
comes from Jagannath. It comes from the Sanskrit.
Because the
yeah, we'll tell you why in a minute. So, the whole mandala or divine area of Puri is circumscribed like a conch, is the shape of a conch.
Tirupati is
on
Google Earth, it's exactly a conch.
Yeah, Tirupati. Because the conch is one of Vishnu's symbols. So there was a deity once in a very secret place in the forest in Puri, or before it was even known as Puri, Purushottam Kshetra. And it was a solid deity of Krishna, I believe, and it was in blue sapphire. It's an amazing deity, and there was a king named Indrajumna, a very saintly king. And he had heard about this deity, and I think the deity also appeared to him in a dream. A deity is God in a statue form, or in some material form, such as, could be a gemstone, stone, could be wood, could be any form really, could be a painting. But deity is usually like wood or stone, or metal. And Indrajumna wanted to go to see this deity, have darshan, have the vision of the deity. So he sent ahead a sage, a holy man, to go and establish if the deity was there. If the deity was there, he was told, King Indrajumna, in his sleep, that his life must be dedicated to Jagannath, Lord of the universe. So when he had a dream of that nature, that was good enough for him. So he sent the guy, his advanced man, his the sage, go and find out if he's there. And he decided he would move his entire kingdom. entire kingdom. Everybody. Lock, stock, and barrel. So, the sage went there. Do you remember the sage's name? He went there and he saw the deity in all blue sapphire. And it was a very powerful, moving experience for him. And he told the person who was looking after the deity that the king had sent him, and the king wants to move his entire capital to where the deity is. And so he was told to come. And then the sage, the advanced man of the king, was also then told that that deity, the blue sapphire deity, was going to disappear. When the king got there, he wouldn't be there. He would not see that deity. And, oh my God, I've already told him to come, and when he's not going to be there, the king's going to be angry, he's going to freak out. The deity's not there. He says, no, but there will be another deity. And the king must come, and he must establish a great city here. Because Jagannath, the Lord of the universe, has a plan. And he needs... God usually doesn't carry out his plans by himself, does he? He elicits the help of whom? His devotees. That's what he does. He elicits the help of his devotees. So that's what he does. That's part of his lila. So the king came with his entire entourage, which took some time. And finally they arrived, and they told the king that the king says, where's Purushottam, Supreme Lord, Supreme Person? He's disappeared. The ground had swallowed him up, I think is what had happened to him. Yeah, all of them. The ground had swallowed him up. So the king was crestfallen, to say the least. What do you mean I've moved my entire kingdom here? Lock, stock, and barrel. There's no deity. He goes to sleep in this sacred place. The Lord appears to him in the dream. More often than not, God appears in dreams to those who are ready to see him. Because if you can't see him face to face, he will appear in dreams. There's countless stories of this. So he appeared in a dream and he said, don't worry, you were meant to come. I wanted you to come. I'm happy you are here. There is a big task I have for you. I'm very pleased that you've come. I want to appear in this place now as Daru Brahma. What does Daru Brahma mean? Anybody? Daru Brahma means Brahma, God, in the form of wood, Daru. He says, I'm going to take the wooden form. And this form is going to become very well known, very famous, very dear, very significant for the people. And I want you to have this form carved in wood in a specific tree, log. And the king in the dream says, well, I don't know, Lord, where will I find this log, this tree? He said, tomorrow, because Puri is right on the seashore, right on the Bay of Bengal, which is part of the greater Indian Ocean, on the eastern side of India. Very, very powerful currents in that ocean. Very powerful. They've got the lifeguards with their cone-shaped hats to help you to come in and out of the ocean. So, he said, tomorrow at sunrise, go down to the sea, and bobbing in the surf will be the log. Have your men take this log from the surf, and you bring it to a place, a private place, where the carving will be done. And there will be an old Shilpi. Shilpi is one who carves deity forms. In Shilpa Shastra, Stapatya Veda, there are specific measurements for divine beings, divine proportions, all the way down from the top of the head to the toes. And the more you see anybody whose bodily form conforms to these divine proportions, the more you go, oh my God, isn't she beautiful? Isn't he beautiful? Correct. Golden mean, the golden ratio, the divine. What else is it called? Yeah, what's the other term for it? Fibonacci would be the one that goes, yeah, with the conch. How conches unfold. So, in Los Angeles many years ago, I was a Sanskrit editor for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and just across the street from my editorial offices, I used to run the whole department, was what they called the doll studio, and the artists were learning how to make divine beings according to the proper proportions. So he said, there is God, Vishnu, in the dream said, there is an old Shilpi, a carver, artist, sculptor. You must get him, and he will carve the deity. Some 95-year-old guy, you know, old guy. And when he begins, no one is to disturb him. And he will be put in a private place. And outside, you will have musicians playing drums and horns and cymbals and shanai and what's the drum? Yeah, but with the shanai. No. And the other one I'm thinking.
Duval.
Can't think of the name. Anyway, to mask the sound of the tick 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 of the carver. So they get the old Shilpi.
Mardin? Mardin?
Nah.
Mardin.
In South India, they're everywhere. Chennai and I have one upstairs. If you say the name, I know it's slipping my mind. No, that's not it. Anyway, maybe. Matasmritir jnanam aponim cha. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So maybe Krishna will give it to us. So, the Shilpi says, it will take me 30 days to carve the deity. I will carve 3 deities. Krishna, his older brother Balaram, and the younger sister of the two, Subhadra. And I will carve a 4th form, Sudarshan Chakra. 4 forms. And the chakra is Vishnu's weapon, Sudarshan Chakra. It'll take me 30 days. At that time, no one must disturb me. If anybody disturbs me for any reason, I'm finished. I will not finish thee. I will walk out. I will be gone. I will not finish thee. Carving. So, 15 days go by. The king's wife, the queen, she's kind of a nosy girl. You're pressed up against the door. That sort of thing. After 15 days, no sound. There's no sound. Your Majesty, Your Majesty, my husband, open the door. The old guy has died. What if he's dropped dead? There's no carving going on. Then you'll be responsible. He says, I can't open the door. God says, don't open the door. Let him finish. He'll come out. No, no, you have to open the door. You have to make sure everything's okay. Can't hear anything. She shouldn't be listening at the door anyway. This is Eve being tempted by the serpent. Eat the apple, eat the apple. It's somewhat similar. So, sure enough, they open the door. And the Shilpi, he's gone. He's disappeared. And these are the forms that remain. These three forms. Not painted in wooden form. Unfinished. Jagannath with the black face, Subhadra in the middle, the yellow face, the sister. So Jagannath is Krishna, Subhadra is the sister in the middle, and Balaram, the older brother on the left with the white face. Now these are very iconic figures. They don't look like people, quote unquote. They have no arms or legs to speak of. And that's what they were left with. And these were painted. And they were put on the altar in Puri. This magnificent temple was built. It still stands. And these are the deities that are worshipped there. For hundreds, for thousands of years, they've been there. The Pandas are the pujaris, the priests that look after the deity. And they've been there for generations and generations and generations. It goes back, way back. If you're a white person, you cannot go into the temple. You're not allowed. If you are non-Hindu, you're not allowed in. Why? Because in that neck of the woods, so there were so many Muslim invasions that had come in, primarily from Turkey. So they would smash everything, destroy everything. they would take down temples brick by brick on the most sacred sites, and they would erect a mosque on those sites. If you go to India today, if you go to Mathura, where Krishna was born, you will find a mosque sitting at Krishna's birthplace, which is the greatest offense, in my opinion. The greatest offense.
Of course, they have a tower in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, there you go. And so from somebody else's point of view, the greatest offense. So, once yearly, they bring these deities are huge. This is a very, very, very small version. And that's the chakra there, that big long pole. And you'll see the chakra in the little, and kind of in the middle by his arm. It takes many, many men to move these deities. And they put out these pillows and they just sort of bump them along from pillow to pillow. They're so heavy. And then they put them up on these huge chariots that they erect, or carts, ratha, chariot. And they have their Ratha Yatra festival in July every year. And these chariots are huge juggernauts, because once they start moving, they are very difficult to stop. How do they move? I mean, the wheels are like 10 feet high, something like that. And a million people come. A million. And there are three big chariots. And I think it's Jagannath in the front, Subhadra in the middle, and Balaram in the rear. And they have big ropes, and the people come and pull the rope. This festival now is being observed all around the world for many years. My guru set that into motion. He has brought that to many, many cities. But the original one still takes place in Puri. It's the biggest, the best, the original. So Jagannath has become quite an iconic figure. And everybody likes Jagannath. Even though when you look at Jagannath, you go, this doesn't even seem right. It seems weird. It doesn't seem natural. It doesn't look like a person. But there's something about Jagannath. It just, after a while, I've talked to countless people who go, I never liked him at first, but now I just love him. That's kind of how it goes with Jagannath. He kind of gets under your skin somehow or other. And naturally, you can see the way he's painted. The children absolutely love him. So, they pull the chariots through the street on huge ropes. It is said that if one dies by being run over by a huge chariot wheel, that is it. You will never take birth again. You will get moksha, spiritual liberation. You can very well imagine in India how many people are eager to hurl themselves under the wheel. So they have big chokidars, big guys with sticks, protecting the wheels and beating off anybody who's decided he's going to liberate himself from his current existence at the expense of the festival. They do not allow it, because it would be a messy state of affairs. And he goes to from the Jagannath temple to the Gundicha temple, which is not very far away. It's like, I don't know, 10 kilometers or something like that, by the beach to take the air. to take the fresh air. This is on the pretext that he's caught a bit of a cold, and he needs to take some beach air. Anyway, so they take him there, and he sits there on his chariot for about a week, I think. And anybody can go see him then. So even if you're a non-Hindu, you can go see Jagannath. And if you're real lucky, they'll actually let you out in the cart and you can get to hug him. Give him a hug. So we didn't get to see Jagannath, but a friend of ours asked us, yeah, no, that's been tried. That's been tried. No, no, they didn't ask us to take tanning lotion. Five 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in Bengal, and we've talked about this. He was an incarnation of Vishnu as well, an incarnation of Radha and Krishna together. And his whole thing was Sankirtan Yajna, chanting the names of God. And practicing bhakti, yoga of love and devotion. And Chaitanya lived most of his adult life in Puri, in this same place. And he would go every day to the Jagannath temple and worship Lord Jagannath. And he would manifest all kinds of ecstatic symptoms in front of the deity or in and around that area. There was a contemporary of Chaitanya who was a Muslim. And his name was Haridas, which is not a Muslim name. Haridas means servant of God. And he's called the Nam Acharya. The Acharya is one who sets the standard. He's a teacher, but it's more than a teacher. He sets the standard of behavior. The Nam Acharya was the Acharya of the name, the holy name. He would chant 300,000 names of God daily on his japa mala, on his beads. 300,000. That's a lot. That's kind of all night and all day, you know. So he was completely immersed in the bliss of love of God through the chanting of the holy name. He didn't associate with Chaitanya directly. He did associate with Chaitanya, but because he was a Muslim, he was essentially an outcast. He himself was not allowed in the temple of Jagannath, even though he was a great devotee. So, and some of the Brahmins, or those in the higher class of society, would look down on him and would regard him as nothing but a low-born Muslim. And then his own people, the Muslims, regarded him as nothing but a low-born Vaishnava, because he had forsaken his Muslim faith and had become a devotee. So everybody looked down on him, except those who were devotees. And Chaitanya thought the world of him, Haridas, and had many pastimes with Haridas, and would bring him prasadam from the Jagannath temple. The food offerings cooked on behalf of Jagannath are famous. Normally, when the deity is served in the temple, they prepare 8 offerings a day of food. Sometimes simple things like fruit salad, cooked preparations, sweets, you name it. They prepare it. This is standard in any Vishnu or Krishna temple. But Jagannath, being the Lord of the universe, they prepare daily at that temple 56 offerings of food. 56. Which boggles the mind. And this food, this mercy, once it's offered to God, it becomes mercy, it becomes prasad. And it is very, very potent, and it will wipe out, at the very least, heaps of negative karmic reaction that you may be carrying, my friends. So we have some of that here tonight for all of you. So if you can't go to Puri, we have brought Jagannath Prasad for you. That's the least we could do. So, there's a tree called Siddha Bakul. And a Bakul tree is a highly, highly fragrant tree. It is supposed to be so fragrant that its fragrance is almost divine. And the Bakul you will find planted in many sacred places throughout India. And I think it's kind of understood that if the Bakul tree grows there, it is more or less assured that this is a highly, highly charged spot. Very potent. Or else Bakul would not be there. I don't know what it smells like exactly, but it's supposed to be otherworldly. So one day, Chaitanya, being God himself, he took a twig from a Bakul tree. Siddha Bakul means divine Bakul, or one with great spiritual potency. He took this branch and he went to visit Haridas.
He went to Jagannath
with it first. He offered it to Jagannath in the temple. Then Haridas had a bhajan kutir right by the sea, kind of away from other people, so he could be private and quiet, not be disturbed. Bhajan kutir is like a hut where you do your bhajan, like a cave or a hut. This is a hut. Simple, very simple. If you visit bhajan kutirs, they're extremely small. You know, there's almost enough room to turn around in them. If you got enough room to lie down, well, then you know you're really doing well. That's a big one. So Chaitanya went to visit Haridas. He would always, daily, bring him Jagannath Prasad from the temple. And if he didn't bring it himself, he would organize that Haridas would have it. When we were staying in Jagannath Puri, Neve, Kalindi and I, we would order it and have it brought to our hotel room. They would bring us Jagannath Prasad in our room. And they would bring us banana leaves, and we'd sit down on the floor. And we put out the banana leaves, and we had dal, and we had 2 kinds of rice, and we had 2 sabjis, and 2 sweets. So we did that in the evenings while we were there. It was good. It was very tasty. More than that, it was very transcendental. I mean, the potency, the whole experience was very powerful. So Chaitanya took this twig from the Siddha Bakulu to Haridas and said, I'm going to plant this tree here in the ground near your Bhajan Kutir. So it will give you shade and fragrance when the flowers bloom. It's a flowering tree. So within days, the tree grew. Within days. Not years. Days. Because Chaitanya planted it. Siddha Bakul is known for its longevity. Those trees live a long time. The tree is still there. Today. 500 years later. So you can't touch the tree. I mean, you can touch the tree. You can't take branches from the tree. It's forbidden. Because everybody would be hacking the tree to pieces. Unless a branch falls from the tree. So there was a cyclone that trimmed a few branches off the tree. And there is a man in Jagannath Puri who is a artist sculptor, and his name is Jagannath. Jagannath Patra. We got a call on the first day. We were only there 3 days, from our friend, my godbrother, Advaita Chandra, whom we had just spent 2 weeks with in Mayapur. And he said, it's my daughter's birthday tomorrow. I said, yeah, very good. Spend time with his daughter. And there is a artist there who has gotten hold of the branch from the Siddha Bakul, and he's carved a form of Haridas, the Namacharya, the main guru of the holy name, because it was planted, the tree was planted outside of his ashram. Could you please go and see if you can't buy this murti of Haridas for my daughter? Sure, why not? Simple enough. We go the first day, find the shop, closed. Go another day, another time, closed. Try to go in the evening, storms, thunder, rain, wind. No problem, next evening. Storms, thunder, rain, wind. Next morning, our last chance. Because we're leaving later that day. We go. 9:30 in the morning, into the market. Beautiful sunny hot day, 38 degrees. Humidity 80-90%. That's what it was the whole time we were there. So we go to the shop, closed. I really did not want to go home empty-handed. We're going to meet Advaita Chandra in Calcutta, for where we would spend our last 2 days. So we were in a shop two doors down buying some things. And I said to the shopkeeper, I says, where is Jagannath? He's never there. He's never open. We've been trying and trying to come, and he looks outside of his shop. He looks down. he's there. He's open. And of course, yeah, he was open. He wasn't when we got there. Is that his son there? He's wearing a yellow shirt. So, we go over there. Does your father have this carving of Haridas from the Siddhabhaku? Yes. He has it. Is it for sale? Yes. Where is your father? Go to the house and meet him. Okay. It's right around the corner. So we go. This one. Three of us. And there's Jagannath waiting outside the door. And he takes us upstairs. Very, very nice man. Very elevated devotee. Very spiritual. Just from my age, maybe older, I don't know. How old is he? 35. No, no. I'm much older than that. And he explains many, many things to us. One, that he's a Gupta Pujari, he calls himself a secret priest. He's not a person who looks after the deity of Jagannath on a regular basis, but he goes to look after the deity of Jagannath from time to time. And we said, well, do you have this deity, this carving of Haridas? He said, oh yes, there, I have it. Points to the shelf, and he goes and brings it down. He says, in fact, I have two. And I said, oh, okay. And we look at it, and I said, this is for sale? He says, yes. And I said, I tell him who it's for. And there was some connection with this other lady whom we never met, but he loved her. Once we mentioned her name, all the doors opened. And so we said, well, we need to get this for Advaita Chandra's daughter, because it's her birthday. No problem. And then he proceeded to give us many things that came directly off Jagannath deity. Like the veins, what they call the veins, which is yellow silk strands. Hanging there. And also the skin, a piece of wood, because the deity is replaced every 12 years. When they replace the deity, the chief priest who looks after the deity must have a dream or go into meditation, and then he is told to go into a forest and find the tree that is supposed to be selected for the next set of Jagannath deities. And how will he know this tree? Because there will be a cobra underneath, because Vishnu also resides on Sheshanaga. So one of the symptoms is there will be a cobra underneath. So the skin, he called the skin of Jagannath, which is the outer part of the deity, she was also given a piece of his skin from an older deity, but the actual deity of Jagannath. So then he says, these are the forms I have carved also from the Siddhabhaku tree. This is Toda Gopinath, and this is Narasingha. When Chaitanya wrapped up his pastimes, we went to this temple here, Toda Gopinath. He disappeared into the knee of this deity. And there's like fire. That's where this one, with the three deities, are surrounded by fire. That is also carved from the Siddhabhaku branch. And he showed us the branch he had left. It was this big. And this round, and all the rest had already been carved. So here, you can pass this around. That's Gopinath, carved from that tree. Toda Gopinath. And this is the Nrsinga that he carved. He told us to do Abhishekam of these two deities every Ekadashi. And he says, then write me a letter and tell me what has happened. So Kalindi had a lot of transcendental experiences on this trip. And she had this, did you have a dream where you were carrying around in your hand?
Dream, not a vision.
That she was carrying this tiny juggernaut in her hand. Do you want to see?
Everywhere I went, there was a small juggernaut in my hand. When I was asleep, he'd be there. If I was in the car, he'd be there. Anything I did, he was always in my hand. And when we met Juggernaut, the first thing he did was open up.
Juggernaut, the man.
The man. He opened up a piece of newspaper. He told me, put your hand out. I put my hand out, and he put a real small little juggernaut on my hand.
Where is it?
Exactly what I had been seeing for about a week.
Exactly what she had seen in her vision, he put into her hand. And then he put one into her hand. And he put another one into my hand. One?
Yeah.
So this is the little juggernaut that he gave us from the Siddhabakul. And this skin comes from Jagannath deity, the Jagannath deity in Puri. And it's just a piece of his wooden skin. So you like Jagannath Puri. When Chaitanya was on the planet 500 years ago, he inaugurated the Yuga Dharma, which was chanting of holy names for Kali Yuga. And one of the predictions that was made, or two of the predictions that was made, is that then chanting of the names of God would spread to every town and village throughout the world over the next 10,000 years. So that's kind of been happening. The other prediction that was made is that there would be a huge, huge temple built in Mayapur, which is the birthplace of Chaitanya. So we had spent our first 2 weeks in Mayapur, in Bengal, West Bengal. We bathed in the Ganges regularly, which is wonderful. And on the full moon night, we organized a couple of boats. No motors, just boats with poles and boatmen. And we went out on the Ganga on the full moon night. Very peaceful, clear night, quiet. And for 2 hours, we just plied the Ganga. It was really, really wonderful. So the other prediction was that there'd be this temple built. So, sorry about the condition of this poster. This is what's being built. This is the largest poster. Largest temple to be built in India in the past 1,000 years. So we went, it's not finished. Yeah. So we had a tour of the temple. It's big.
It's 9 acres
building. And already, I mean, there's so many people. For us, Neve and Kalindi and myself, we sort of like quiet, not too densely populated places, like where we live. Well, it was just, I don't know how many people were there, thousands of people were there every day while we were there. So, I mean, it was so busy that we couldn't even, sometimes you couldn't even get in. So busy. Not this temple. This temple is being built next door. This is not even built yet. Anyway. Because there's also a Vedic planetarium within it. There are many differences. According to the Puranas, how the universe is built, how it's conceived, how it's set into motion, how it works, is vastly different from what science says and thinks it is. So it would be set up
more than looking at the stars. It has to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly how it's set up, and even the calculation of the equinoxes and where the signs are, all that's erroneous, you know, in terms of Western astrology. So this would be based more on the Vedic system. So that's part of it. So it's a temple with the deities and the worship of the deities like every other temple, except it also has a scientific aspect to it with these with the Vedic planetarium. I'm sort of running out of steam. Questions, comments?
Steve, what kind of changes you've seen after 35 years?
Well, it's been much, much more developed. Well, I was there in 1976 and 1977, and we were Western devotees, we were white people, and the Indians did not take up, I mean, not that there weren't Indians who didn't do Sankirtan and follow precepts of Vaishnavism. There were. Always have been. But it wasn't popular, quote unquote. It wasn't popular among the Indians. But because so many white people, Western people, Europeans, Americans, etc., had taken very seriously to this practice or this process, and then the Indians began to take it more seriously. Now, see, back then you'd never see hardly any, you know, you'd see only serious sadhus wearing tilak and dhoti and chanting with mala. That'd be only sadhus. The common people, you know, householders, grihasthas with their families, who obviously would come to the temple, they would never, you'd never see them like this, but now you'll see thousands of them like that there. That's what I noticed.
There was, I think, one of the British scholar, when he went to India, he said that he didn't see any beggars there. He said the moral values are very high. He said, if we really wanted to rule this country, right, okay, we have to, first of all, he said that we change the educational system and this and that.
Yeah, but that's the British trying to corrupt everything for their own ends.
Yeah, that's legit, actually. Then again, the Islamic and then...
Yeah, but that's not what I'm talking about.
But there was a reason, Andrew. The same as yoga as well. Yoga was now very popular in India now, not in 40 years ago. 40 years ago when...
Because Westerners took it up.
Then says, my God, that was my grandfather used to do that. Why, you know? And then they took it more seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the old, their teachers, if you learn more Westerners, that's the, if you're more educated, that's the old, you know, that was all the philosophy, mythology, shouldn't be followed.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, now you see all the Indians embracing it as well, so it's very good. And it's a balance. I mean, they're also pursuing Western, you know, Western objectives. But at least now it's in more of a, they have more of an appreciation for their own culture and their own philosophy and their own value.
So that's your first time in India, me?
Mm-hmm.
Must be short. Because when we went to Macau, in that hotel we went, and there was 10,000, they have a conference for people, 10,000, and they all coming, and from here, like Irish and some British people, oh my God, mm-hmm. What's that? I got people, they have every relative. They can see. They go, that's all right. It's common.
It's common. Yeah. In India, no big deal to you. So many people.
And they went to like a town and the lots of Chinese people everywhere here. Oh my God, that's such a busy town. I said, that's normal.
Exactly.
You were mentioning earlier about the golden ratio in terms of divine beings, architecture, etc., etc. Magnificent book to read on the whole topic. It's a book called Harmony by Prince Charles. It's one of the best books I've read.
I'd like to pick that up.
About the golden ratio and architecture and art. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fascinating.
By Prince Charles.
Prince Charles, yeah. He wrote it. It's a book on architecture, organic food, and sustainability of the planet.
Wonderful.
And he devotes quite a lot of talking about the golden ratio and how it's applied to architecture and art.
Good.
He's a man that actually practices what he preaches. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we do have.
So we're going to have 1st of May then? Yeah.
1st of May will be our next get, only 2 weeks from now. I'm going to speak at the Hare Krishna temple on Sunday. They've asked me to speak at 3 o'clock on Abbey Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they've asked me to speak on how to attract the all-attractive person. That will be the topic. To
attract
the all-attractive person. You're welcome to that if you want to come. Okay. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.